welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message. Well, so today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite things, and it's all about meals, right? When you think of your favorite meal, and not the food, but like the actual event, does anything come to mind? Could anyone name one of your, like, the best meals you ever had? Hannah's laughing, so that means, yes. Hannah, do you want to share what your favorite meal was? Ribs? Oh, my God. Yes, I do that about you. All right. Where were the ribs? He made them, all right, and you ate them. He smoked them. And was there anyone else with you? No. Okay. Anyone else? The people. But can you think of a specific moment that you were with people and eating a meal? Okay. Do you want to share? Aw, like recently? Oh, what a beautiful thing. Anita said it was, remember, people can't hear online. She said it was all her kids and adult humans being around the table with her. Anyone else you can think of one of your favorite meals? Oh, that is very specific. Wow. It was mushroom risotto, Fruition Restaurant in Denver, Colorado in 2011. Wow, that must have been some. Whoa. Yeah. That is, see, I need new friends. My friends don't do anything like that. Man, all right. That is the best. Order whatever you're on your menu, and I'm getting it. So, like, what makes a great meal, like being with your adult children, the food is the context. And the food might be mind-blowing, like smoked ribs, but it's so much more than just a meal. It's about, like, who's there, what you're celebrating, what happened before, what happened after. And it feels super life-giving. One of my favorite meals was in my, I don't know the year, but I was in my 20s, and we went to this restaurant with our friends Nick and Anna and my brother and his wife, and we had a place called Hot Dish in the cities, but it's H-A-U-T-E, Hot Dish, so it was like hip with it and wow. And it was a new restaurant. My brother, who's not a critique, but was a chef and knew some good restaurants, and we went there, and there's no way we could afford it. In our 20s, we were working at a church as youth pastors, and we made $30,000 combined, my wife and I. But it was like we just had a kid. Maybe we had two kids. We had another human living in our house, and we got like it was like a restaurant where you had to like dress up, and it felt like I remember getting like a tie on, and I looked in the mirror. I'm like, oh my God, I'm an adult, right? So you remember those times, like when you're young, and you're like, oh, this is like what adults do, and it was like one of the first times we got away from the kids, and it was like we needed it, right? I still love my kids, but man, it is hard having kids. So we're like, we need a break. So we went there, got dressed up, and we ordered the tasting menu, which is like the chef picks like several entrees and appetizers. He paired wine with every single dish, and I have a picture. I just looked at it in my office, which now I'm thinking we have this technology where I could put pictures on screens, this magic, and I just realized I could have put it up there. I'm a great pastor. And there's this picture where Nick, my brother Dan, and I are standing next to each other, and then Nick, like, put his neck in, or his face into my neck, and I laughed, and my brother tried punching me, and we're laughing, and we're all in this awkward position, and it captured, like, illicit joy, right? And we needed that moment. I'll never forget it. It was one of the happiest, I'm not going to cry, one of the happiest nights of my life because we were so desperate for love. We were so desperate to experience life outside of our kids and our job and our stress. It was like that escape. And I wasn't planning on telling how we ended the night. It was so cold. We were walking home because we're too poor to pay for a taxi. And it was so cold, we had to run into a building to warm up. And the only thing open at like 10 o'clock at night was a club. And we all dressed up in nice clothes, walk into a club. The guy looks at us and he's like, yeah, just come on in. It's like there's a cover charge. We walk in, we're the only people there because apparently clubs don't dance at 10 o'clock. And we danced for like an hour with barely anyone there. No, this has nothing to do with my message. But, right? But the whole context of that night was food. And I don't remember what you're eating. It was very, very good. But food really, really matters. And we can like overplay food where we get hypercritical and overthink about food. And then we can underthink food of like food is just fuel. Anyone been there? You had a season, you're like, food is just fuel. All I need is protein shakes. And you're like, I really want a steak. So, right? But like regardless of where we're at, food still like sustains us. Food helps us survive. Food helps us celebrate. Food helps us like remember who we are. Like depending on like your culture, right? How you grew up, maybe there's something for generations your family has been cooking. I think of, I'm glad my parents aren't here. They usually sit right here, and I have to apologize when I tell bad stories about them. But my dad would make cinnamon rolls when I was young, and he'd proof them on top of the wood-burning furnace downstairs. And I'll never forget the smell. And the raisins were always burnt, and I loved it. It's why I still love burnt food to this day. And that makes me think of every time I eat a cinnamon roll, I think of my old man. My mom would make lasagna. It's still my favorite lasagna, but we'd have to eat it in a bowl because it was so soupy. And my mom apologizes every time for that. Right? It's funny, right? But like when I eat like dry lasagna, I'm like, I wouldn't mind a little bit of slop in my lasagna, right? No one at no restaurant, they say, how do you want your lasagna? Because I'd say, sloppy, please. So, but like those memories of my family like brings me back to my parents, right? Food is something so much more than just helping us get calories in our body. And it's so important, right, that I'm a great pastor because I'm going to make it about the Bible, right? Paul talks about this in Romans 14, all about food and days of rest. And it's so important that he took time out of this chapter to specifically talk about it because he gets the bit. Food is something so much more than just sustenance. Now, I'm going to read a little bit out of Romans 14. And if you're newer here, we've been going through for the last couple, 13, 14 months through the book through the book of Romans, and we only have one chapter left. And I've loved it. I've really enjoyed studying going through Romans. I remember where I was going. The context of why Paul's writing it matters, right? He's writing because there's this church in Rome, and it's made up of two demographics. One is Jewish people, right? And they have a distinct history and trauma and beauty and culture and over 600 different laws of how they're supposed to walk and live their day. Then you have another group called Gentiles. Do you guys remember Gentiles, right? Whenever I hear the word Gentile, I instantly think of like, what country are they from? They're every country, right? Gentiles are everyone that's just not Jewish, right? So that it's unfair term. Because what we're lumping into the Gentile is a wide, vast array of different cultures. And in every culture, you have subculture, right? So, like, who lives in Duluth? All right? We live in Duluth, but if you said where you live in Duluth, if you lived in Eastside, we'd call you a cake eater, all right? Yes. You're like a Lakeside, right? And then if you lived on the west side of town, people would say, well, are you West Ender or West Side? And if you don't know the difference, you've not met a West Ender, all right? Because they're very particular. So in every culture, there's subcultures. And every subculture is different ways that you celebrate holidays. There's different food that you eat. There's different food that you use to celebrate those holidays. There's different stories and how you how you celebrate love, how you celebrate traditions. It's like this vastly wide, different, beautiful, diverse group of people. So some scholars, not every scholars, tell the story of this specific church in Rome. There was a decade and a half where a part of the Jewish community had like this uprising, this political uprising where there was violence, and the Romans exiled this Jewish community out of Rome for a while. And when Paul's writing this letter, some scholars believe is when this group of Jewish people are coming back into the church, which would make sense because Paul's letter is very, very specific and pointed towards the Jewish community on how to not coexist with the Gentiles, but how to find flourishing and inspiration belonging with all people, that there's room at this table. So something's happening with food between the Jewish people and everyone else. And I'm going to read just a couple verses to give us some context of what he says. Starting in verse 1, chapter 14. Accept the one whose faith is weak, without quarreling over disputable matters. One person's faith allows him to eat anything, but another whose faith is weak eats only vegetables. The one who eats everything must not treat with contempt the one who does not, and one who does not eat everything must not judge the one who does, for God has accepted them. Even as I'm reading them, like, this is wild that Paul, in our sacred texts, right, for thousands of years, Paul decided to write, inspired by God, to talk about people who eat everything and people who eat vegetables. Right? It doesn't make sense. Like, how is this even applicable to us? But it is incredibly progressive, and it's foundational to who we are as followers of Jesus. And here's why. We are incredibly picky people, right? And no one, even my brother is like, Chris, you're so picky. I'm like, I'm not picky. I have preferences, right? And then I usually punch him in the arm, right? And no one wants to be called picky, right? No one wants to feel like, even just yesterday, I heard someone ask for extra grenadine in their soda, and she's like, I'm so sorry, I'm really needy. I'm like, you're not needy, you have preferences, right? And Paul is saying, yeah, celebrate your preferences. That's wonderful. And he's highlighting specifically the Jewish people who have very distinct laws about food. And that food is not just like, this is better for you, so eat this over that. It's how do you connect to God? How do you connect with one another? How do you connect with the ground? And those laws orientate their lives of how they show up in the room as a way of being the people of God. So this is a very, very sacred thing. But Paul is saying, yeah, that's awesome. We celebrate that. We're happy for you. But if it excludes even one person, if you bring judgment on what they're eating and what they're not eating, and it's Paul's saying, then just like maybe not do it. And he's not saying, let's throw away all our customs. He's saying, maybe we do that at a different time because we're going to choose people over belief every single time. And that is the heart of what Paul's talking about. Later on in chapter 14, he's talking about, hey, if you find a day that is sacred and holy, that's the Sabbath, but another person sees the day as just every normal day, he's like, well, let's go for it. Maybe you celebrate the Sabbath in a different way when this person's around or when these people are around. Why? People over belief every single time. And he uses this word, strong people and weak people. And many scholars believe that Paul is like, what do you call that? Sarcasm, right? Like tongue in cheek. And he's creating an us and them language, which Paul works throughout the whole entire book of Romans. He works really hard at not using us and them language. But for this argument, he's saying there's the strong people, have the strong faith, and then there's the weak people, as to compare the two. Another scholar, the one that I use the most for this series, he says if you take it literally, which they don't, but if you did, then Paul's using language he uses like in Philippians, of where Jesus was at a place of strength and power, and chapter 2 intentionally became less and became weak. In the upside-down kingdom of God, the first shall be last, the last will be first. So Paul is like being sarcastic in a way. He's celebrating those who might be called weak are actually strong, right? But the big argument is that he's comparing there's you and there's them. And it's really important because if you want to choose people over belief, and you want to do that over like big-time beliefs, which we'll get to a little bit, but you can't do it about food, then there's no hope to find community. There's no hope to find flourishing for all people. So here's an example. Have you guys heard that it's an election year? Anyone? Is this news to you, right? Like we have Trump and we have Biden. And in our country, if you're not aware, politics matter. And if you know me, I love politics. I listen to way too much political news and podcasts, and I like it. And I happen, This might surprise you. I have my own political bias as well. I am a bleeding heart liberal, right? But even me, as being very liberal, in this country, we are very polarized when it comes to politics, right? And we have extreme ends. And on each party, I forgot to say this. And when I use the word conservative, which I bring up many times in my message, I honestly, I don't mean it as they're wrong and the liberals are right, right? I'm good and they're evil. And I have the best ideas and these people don't. Conservative, I have, I have one conservative friend. My token conservative, right? And we were just texting over the news this past week. And I believe my friend Charlie, right? I believe my friend. And he finds belonging, inspiration, and beauty in his political beliefs. And I celebrate that. I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's evil. We just find different starting points, and we both want the end goal, right? We want human flourishing for all people. But in these like polarized spaces, there's unwritten rules. There's undefined lines that if I'm a bleeding heart liberal and progressive, if I come a little too far to the center, people will say, "Well, Chris, you're not really a true progressive." I'm like, because I'm taking a centric approach to this one policy idea, right? So then I'm out of the community. And the same thing, people who are conservatives and like the term RINO, right? Republicans in name only has come up because they are not going as extreme or as far to the, I'm going the wrong side. Oh, it's to your right. Yeah, you're welcome, right? See, I did that intentionally. Right? They're not going as far right as the other party is. So then they broke the rules, so they're not true conservatives. And like the whole idea of what Paul is saying is, if you are on one side and you look at someone else and you dehumanize them, because I've been guilty of this. I'm having a therapy session, right? I've looked at conservative people and said those people are wrong. How could they ever vote for that guy? What in the world are they thinking this policy? And it's dumb, right? And I've labeled conservative people in one big chunk as the same person. Anytime that you dehumanize people, like if we follow the Bible, like the Old Testament, when God gets can I say that word? I don't know if I can say that word. When God gets angry, all right? It's when people have dehumanized other people. When Jesus loses his mind, it's when people have dehumanized women. It's when people have dehumanized oppressed, marginalized people. So by me labeling us, we're good, and all these people are bad, without knowing the story, the nuance, the beauty, the reason why they believe what they believe, right? Paul is saying, what if we just like didn't do that? And when you, like, has everyone ever been the recipient of someone choosing a belief over you? Raise your hand. Let's trauma bond, right? It sucks, right? Like, we had some of our best friends, and I'll never forget, I think about them all the time. In our kitchen, they flew in from Colorado, and in our kitchen, I made some sort of joke about, like, the devil. I'm like, yeah, you know, because the devil's real, right? And, like, I don't believe in hell, right? And he looked at me, he's like, you don't believe in hell? I'm like, I'm sorry, man. Like, no, but, like, if you do, like, I celebrate that. Like, if that helps you find inspiration and helps you find a loving God that willingly sends people to hell for all time, the burn and constant pain, and that you call that love, I celebrate that. I didn't say that. and then he's like, well, if you change the Bible, what else have you changed? And we went through, like, two other theological points, and they lost their minds. They were so angry. And we stopped being friends after that. And I kept telling them, like, I'm not going to say their names. I'm not asking you to march in a parade, right? I'm not asking you to, like, get in front of their pastors, to get in front of your church and to share these things. I understand why you believe this. And I actually, like, I don't celebrate it, but you find belonging. And this is how you think the Bible talks about you and other people and God. And, like, go for it, man. I love you. I'm going to choose our friendship. We raised all our babies together. We spent Thanksgivings together. We've I love them. I still do. I think about them all the time. And they said, we can't do this. They chose a theological belief over 15 years of friendship. And us who trombo on it, it kills. And this is what Paul's getting at. He's saying, you're going to judge other people because they eat this kind of food at this time? You're going to exclude someone else because they choose to, like, not rest on the same day that you rest? And if it's down here, this low-level thing about food, then, like, I heard a story. Well, the amount of people that I've talked to who had to put up boundaries with family members because they evolved with their faith, the faith that their parents handed them, which was appropriate at the time, but as they grew older, they've changed some beliefs. I can think of like 10 people right now that are not talking to some extended family members because they said, actually, I don't believe that anymore, and I still love God, and I love the Bible, I just think about a couple things differently. And the devastation was for them to remind their parents or their family members over and over and over again saying, yeah, you can believe that. I believe this. I love you. Can we just not talk about it? And the parents just kept crossing that boundary over and over to the point where they said, for my mental health, we have to take a break. And then the parents double down and try even harder to shame and bully the parent, the kids back into relationship, creating even this bigger distance of like, oh, you don't see me as a human. You don't see me as your kid. You see me as a project. And I have to line up with this theological views in order to get love, not even love, to get even respect, human decency from you. That's toxic. And Paul, again, is saying, if you can't do that with food, if you can't see the human in front of you to be able to pivot, how are we going to do that with policies? How are we going to do that in our schools? How are we going to do that in our jobs of being able to create a place where people over beliefs is the most important thing? Because I don't know. I take the words of Jesus pretty seriously. And when someone said, hey, Jesus, what's like the most important law we can follow? And he says, to love your Lord God with your mind, body, and spirit, like everything. And how do you love God? By loving people. And how do you love people? Because you believe them. You listen to them. You hear them. And when there's something that comes up, you might have the best intent, right? You're going to tell this joke, and it's killed with all these other people. And your intent is great. And you tell that joke, and the person doesn't laugh and says, hey, my man, like, you can't use that word anymore. And how do most men, I'm going to pick on men, I happen to be in the club, right? I belong to a golf club. I am middle-aged, right? men respond when people say, you can't do that anymore, and men respond how? Wow, thank you for the opportunity for me to learn and grow. I love people telling me my mistakes, and I'm a better person for it, right? Never. That never. Dan is just like this awkward look at her. She's like, nope, not my experience, right? No, men do what? They're like, what? You're taking that word from me now? Oh, my dad told that joke. My grandpa told my joke. Oh, come on. You're being too sensitive, right? Your intent was good, or your intent was fine, but the impact clearly is not. And what Paul is saying is when you have an impact that is harming someone else, what do? You learn. You ask questions. You listen. You evolve and you grow. That is what it means to love people. So here's my invitation. If we, I'm going to say this. Like everyone here, right? You guys, maybe you've talked with each other, maybe you haven't. But I have talked with a majority of you, and I know I'm not going to share them. We're just here like, oh, crap, is Chris going to start spilling the tea? Right? I know your trauma. I know your stories. I know the beauty. I got to marry you guys, right? Like, there's some beautiful things. And we are at very different places, all of us, right? And it's the kind of church I've always wanted to lead, is where we're going to choose people over beliefs. It, you know, people say, like, well, what's your doctrine? I'm like, I think we got, like, three. If you go to our website, if you've never gone to our website and you've been coming for a while, you might want to go to our website and look at what we believe. Because, like, the things that we collectively as a church believe, it's, like, three things. And they're so vague that you could take it 20 different ways. And because it's all about love, right? That our doctrine is that we're going to choose love over doctrine, which is kind of a weird doctrine. But why am I saying this? Oh, I remember. So the kind of church I've always wanted to pastor is that we are all different places. And I celebrate that. And I want to make room that you don't have to be bleeding heart liberal to be in this church, right? You don't have to have the same beliefs or convictions as me. Where every other church I've been a part of, right? I've been a part of two others where I worked at. Like, if you disagreed with the pastor, you were out. Because it was like mob mentality. It was groupthink. And you had to go, it's called assimilation. You ever heard of that word? Yeah. Well, do you guys know what that's from? It's from Star Trek, originally. The Borg. Yeah, I'm such a nerd. All right, you know what I'm talking about? The Borg would come and they would assimilate people. Remember they put little things in their eyes? You're welcome, all us internet nerds out there, right? But in the church world, it's actually a term. And it's not inherently bad, but you'd have to go through a series of classes to learn what the church believes, and then you would have to sign up to become a member. You'd have to say, I agree with all these beliefs, which is wild. Because if you sat down the thousands of people that went to that church, I bet out of those thousands of people, maybe two things everyone would agree to. But people are like, well, I want the best of community, which means I have to assimilate and become just like what the pastor believes. Right? It's crazy. It's good. It's really good for business. As our account, you know, it's really good if people all say we all are one, we're all the same, and we turn off our rational brain, right? Then we just, like, become assimilated. And the kind of church that we are, which, again, like Paul, is we can be at different places. We can enjoy different foods. We can celebrate how we love differently. Politically, we can be different. How we parent, how we treat a holiday can be different, and you can show up, and the real you, I love saying this, the real you is never a threat, and that is not an empty statement. I believe that to my core. I believe this is what Paul is saying. In chapter 15, in verse 1 and 2, Paul says, you know what, maybe it's not so bad to lose. You know why? Because even Jesus lost. Even Jesus willingly gave up his power to go to the cross. So maybe it's not so bad that our preferences are lowered at times. Because when you lower your preference, you extend love. And where love is heaven. Heaven is not just some place at some other time. Heaven is embodied. Heaven is here. And we get to experience it when we embody love and we extend that love. So I hope this week. Oh, last point. The only way we can do this, you see how I always catch myself? I'm like, oh, I have another brilliant thing to share with you. Only way we can do this is if we're awake. Because when we go into autopilot mode, when we just go like, when we just shut down and all we focus is our pleasure, our preferences, our trauma, our pain, right? Then what we do is we exclude everyone else. And we treat everyone else as just like, no, think about me, center me, pay attention to me. And we have times where we go through that, right? But if we want to do what Paul is saying, you have to be awake. And being awake means you can see the person in front of you. And not just see the person in front of you, you can, like, believe the person in front of you. It is, and I use that word intentionally, if you actually take the time, like, we were just talking about graduation, right? My kid graduated on Friday. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was a big deal. It seriously was. There was a couple, I'll leave those details out, so. Pivot. I'm doing what Paul says. Don't exclude anyone. Pivot. So when I still remember one conversation with my kid during COVID, and I didn't believe him. He kept saying, I don't know. I don't know. And at the time in our house, I kept saying, I don't know is not an answer. I'm such a good dad, right? Such a good parent, right? And I was like, that's not an answer. Blah, blah, blah. Why are blah, blah, blah? And finally it took my son, he had a chalkboard wall in his room. And I went downstairs, very hot, or not hot, yeah, hot and bothered. I was angry. And I like walked in the room like a good parent does without knocking the power up on a kid, right? And I'm like, why? Blah, blah, blah. And all he did was just point to the wall. And he wrote, he just wrote, I don't know. And finally, after months of arguing about this, I'm like, oh, I was asleep. I was only focused on me. I was focused on what my dad did to me, right? And I hated when my dad would do that. And I'm doing the very same thing to my kid. I'm traumatizing my kid because I don't believe him. And when he pointed to the wall, I'm like, I believe you. And it changed everything. Because once he felt heard, once he felt seen, then we could process of why he doesn't know. And then we were able to go get help for him not knowing. And it completely changed everything. So we have to be awake and see the person in front of us, hear the person in front of us, and believe the person in front of us. And when we do that, that's how we find transformation. If we can do that with food, then we can do that in our schools. Then we can do that in our neighborhoods. And maybe someday we can do that with policies that shape how we show up in a room day to day. Okay. So the way we're going, do I have it up here? Yes, good. I'm such a good pastor. Make sure we have communion before I announce communion. The reason that we do communion is to what Jesus says on the night before he was betrayed. He says, do this in remembrance of me. So we have we have gluten-free. You're welcome. I know. I was gluten-free for a while, and then I totally gave up on that community. Not by purpose, right? So we have gluten-free, but we take the crackers as a representation, as a metaphor, as a way to remember and to worship how Jesus' body was broken so that we can find believability in Christ and inspiration and liberation. And we take the juice. It is juice, no alcohol. As a way to remember the blood that was spilled, that Jesus gave not just his body, but his life. And then 3 days later, resurrection, so that we can also live in resurrection life. But also we do it, we see this, and Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians, is that it's a way to have a meal together. Food matters. And it's not a great meal, I promise you. It's a very disappointing meal. Right? It's not, you're not going to like raise your hand. My best meal is at church with an old crusty cracker. But it's a way for us, like as a community, communally doing the same things. Why we do worship, we're all saying the same things at one time to demonstrate that this body not only matters, this body is good and beautiful. So I'm going to pray. And then if you want to take communion, I'll put some music on. I don't have good communion music, so it might be country music. Whatever's on my phone is going to be playing, right? But it's all to worship God. You're welcome. When I'm done praying, whoever wants it, you can just make your way up. You can take it by yourself. You can take it with who you came with, or you can take it with strangers. And then when we're all done, I will close the service, and then we'll go celebrate the rest of our Sunday. So let me pray. So God, we absolutely love you. And I thank you for the gift of a table. At that table can be an average meal, but when our adult children sit around it, and we can laugh. When our friends, after a long day of work, come over and we can clink glasses. And even at the table we might be alone with, like our furry friend, we can still find a place to rest. And I thank you for the gift that is. That you created us to not just eat food, but you created us to share food with one another. And by sharing food, we're sharing life. We're sharing stories and inspiration. So I ask God that this week that we can be awake and we can believe the person in front of us, and we might even get curious and ask questions. And if something of a preference where we need to pivot, God, will you give us the wisdom and the strength, the moxie to pivot towards love and inclusion? Because this table is wide and it's open for everybody. So use us, God, to bring life and belief and transformation in the places and the tables that we're at. We love you. Amen.